Thank you for joining us today for our Talking Asset Management podcast. I'm Greg Williams, National Sector Leader for Asset Management in the United States. And I'm joined today by my friends and colleagues from Canada, Brazil, and Mexico. We have James Lowen, who heads our asset management practice in Canada. Tom Rothfisher, who leads our real estate practice in Canada. We have Lino Jr., who leads our asset management practice in Brazil. And Carlos Fernandez, who's our asset management leader in Mexico. You've heard from us before in our previous podcast. At that time, we were about to come into a new administration with an election. We were talking about the uncertainty and what might happen depending on which way the election went. And here we are post-election in the U.S. as well as post-election in a number of different areas across the Americas and frankly, the world. And when we think about the U.S., we clearly, with this administration, have more aggressive boldness in their platforms and their initiatives. And they're playing out with more drama than we've seen in the past. And that's creating some uncertainty in the short term and on its impacts for the future, both on current policy decisions as well as what the administration is signaling they may go. And we're also fortunate to be joined today by my colleague and friend, Yelena Maleev, who is a senior economist in our chief economist office here in the United States. And looking forward to Yelena sharing with us what she's seeing in the economy today and where it may be going. Someone told me the other day, they said, you know, Greg, this may be the most uncertain environment that we've ever seen. And I think people have forgotten we just come out of COVID. I'm not sure we're in the same amount of uncertainty that we had during the COVID environment. But clearly, throughout the U.S. and the world, with the changes and geopolitical changes and policy changes and views, clearly it's different than we've seen in the past. And so now we're here, and the economy over the last couple of years has stabilized, and we, quote, thought we achieved this soft landing, but now we're kind of in some of this still uncertain territory. And so I want to start, Yelena, with maybe just having you kick it off and give us some of your insights on the economy today. And maybe a little bit of your crystal ball telling you what should we think about in the coming months.
Thank you so much, Greg. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. So uncertainty is going to be the word of the day, really be the theme of everything I'm going to cover. We have been working with scenarios over the last few weeks rather than just creating one forecast, because as we have seen in the news, things can change very quickly. So we are just trying to create an environment where we can at least figure out which direction the U.S. economy can go this year. Now, we are recording this podcast on March 21st. This week, we had the Federal Reserve meet, and they have held rates steady. They have also released their economic projections for the next few years. And I just want to do a little compare and contrast between their expectations and ours. First of all, they marked down GDP growth for the year. So back in December, they thought this year's growth would be 2.1%. They have now marked it down to 1.7%. And that's exactly in line with what we expect in our baseline scenario. So just to give you some context, that 1.7 is just slightly above half the pace of what we saw in the last few years. So a pretty remarkable slowdown in the overall economy. But I will say that a 3% growth rate for the U.S. economy is incredibly strong and inflationary. So there wasn't already an expectation that that 3% was not sustainable. But 1.7, like I've said, is our baseline. Our more pessimistic scenario based on this idea that uncertainty could be around longer, and uncertainty does act as a tax on the economy. It slows down business investment decisions, hiring decisions, big ticket purchases by households. If people aren't feeling so great about the economy, they might not be going out as much. And so in a more pessimistic scenario where the uncertainty lasts longer, growth could be quite anemic, maybe just about 1%. And of course, the big question that is on the mind of economists and the Fed is what will inflation do? Because a slowing economy also tends to be complemented by a slowing inflation rate. But if you have trade wars and escalation in trade and tariffs and export controls and other things that create these distortions in the economy, that could actually be inflationary if it has this effect that isn't just that one-time price increase. If we see retaliation from our trade partners, many of whom are on the call with us today, if we see businesses try to create supply chains that go around these trade restrictions and then create maybe even longer supply chains, a lot of those impacts could be quite inflationary. So the Fed actually marked up their inflation projections for the year for core inflation, that excludes food and energy. They marked it up from a 2.5% to a 2.8%. Their goal is 2%, so we're not there yet. we actually have inflation hitting a 4% rate in the middle of this year, based on our assumptions that tariffs are going to happen, even more so than we've seen so far. So April 1st will be the next round, we believe. And with that, there will be retaliation and a lot of tensions that are not going to be resolved very quickly, translating to a higher inflation rate. So in that pessimistic scenario, again, inflation is even higher. And then we enter this world of stagflation, the stag meaning the economy is slowing markedly, deflation meaning inflation is still picking up even if the economy is slowing down. That's a really tough path for a central banker to walk down, because you have this dual mandate of you want to make sure the labor market is healthy, we're not falling into a recession, you want to keep interest rates lower, but then if inflation repeatedly is above your 2% target, that's a concern, and you don't want to be cutting interest rate into such an inflationary environment. So again, a lot of uncertainty, a lot to unpack here. And of course, even though the Fed is the central bank to the US, what happens with the Fed doesn't just stay in the US, it does spill over to our partners. And so that's why I'm really excited to be part of this conversation today.
Thanks, Elaine. A couple of thoughts is, what's your view on unemployment as we look at the labor market, which is critical to the economy as well? How are you viewing the unemployment market as we move forward?
Our base case scenario at this stage is only about a 4.3 unemployment rate, just a smidge higher than today's 4.1. That is not a recession. That is not anything to be too alarmed about just yet. But as I've said, if uncertainty remains in the market longer, in the economy longer, and businesses are not only not hiring, but they actually start to do mass layoffs, and there isn't this absorbing mechanism where other organizations can hire these workers that got laid off, like we saw a couple of years ago when tech was going through mass layoffs, they got absorbed by other parts of the economy. If we're having this kind of simultaneous slowdown in hiring and the increase in layoffs, we can see an unemployment rate above 5%, but that is not our base case scenario right now. And the same for the Fed. They have a 4.4% for this year.
So predicting still a strong labor market in the U.S., I view this 4.3 as being considered a strong labor market. And when you think about interest rates, any thoughts? We focus on the Fed a lot in the short-term rates, but in our industry, the longer-term rates, the 10-year treasury is more of a benchmark, and we haven't seen any reductions or reductions that are similar to what we've seen in the short-term rates, and the impact that has on other parts of our economy, for example, the housing market is significant. Thoughts on 10-year treasury outlook at all?
The 10-year treasury has been a tricky one to forecast simply because there's kind of dueling forces pushing it in different directions. There's the idea that the Federal Reserve is cutting rates, the economy is expected to slow down, there's less momentum in the system, so that has caused the 10-year to fall slightly in recent weeks. But at the same time, the idea that Congress and the administration are looking to pass more spending bills or at least extend the tax cuts that will be expiring at the end of this year, pressures on inflation, the expectation that the Fed actually won't have much room to cut, is kind of keeping 10-year treasury rates a little bit higher than they should be considering the lower growth environment. Right now, the 10-year treasury is around 4.25%. We don't see it coming off much more than that, even if the Fed was to cut in the second half of the year, which we don't expect at this stage because of our inflation expectations. We can see the 10-year treasury into the end of the year around that 4.2 number.
You're expecting no cuts this year. I mean, I think they signaled this week, potentially two additional cuts. KPMG's views is there are probably no cuts the rest of the year. And that's really driven by your assumption that some of the tariffs that are being proposed will actually go into effect, which is yet to be determined whether or not they'll actually occur. You know, my thoughts on the tariffs is the administration wants something in return, and to the extent they're able to get something in return, we may not see the tariffs, or we could see them and more. I think that's going to require our industry to be agile as they respond to this. And if I think about the market's response in the U.S., investor perspective is we have seen an uptick in deal flow, not at the levels that we anticipated coming into 2025, but clearly it's above what it was last year. Last year was clearly a down year. And we continue to see, especially in the private credit market, the PE market deal flow starting to pick up. Even if you think about some of the real estate spaces, such as the data center space, which is driven by this Gen AI expansion and the need for more computing power. So there are certain parts of the market you're starting to see more deals. So I think that there is some uncertainty out there, but with interest rates becoming more certain, you're starting to see more activity pick up. And I expect that to continue to increase throughout the year. But again, it's going to require some agility due to the drama that's being created, if I can use that word, with these proposed tariffs, tariffs on, tariffs off. It just creates some hesitation, as Yelena talked about, in investments. So maybe with that, just kind of set the stage of what's happening in the U.S. from an economic perspective and maybe the outlook. Maybe just kind of get some views from the experts here, my friends here, on what differs in your respective regions as it relates to the economy and economic outlook. So maybe I'll start with Lino. Lino, from Brazil's perspective, what's the world looking like?
When we look to Brazil, it's very important that the Brazil government needs to control their expenditures and have a deep look at the fiscal and admin reforms. Without that, what we are seeing here, we are seeing inflation is still above the target. Interest rates, I remember when we had that conversation last year, was 11%. So in this week, central bank rose to 14.25%, which is very high interest rate. And they still have like a increased bias if they do not control inflation. Another thing that we have here, the FX rate, US Brazilian reais, is now around 6 reais per $1, which is still very high for certain parts of the economy. All this scenario brings uncertainty to the investors, like you mentioned, and probably the same thing in other countries in the world. We are going to reach the second year of the President Lula term, who is the important representative of the left party and with more focus on the social than business. So this is the outlook that we are seeing here in Brazil nowadays.
So with the uptick in interest rates, which is significant, what's the outlook for people thinking the next 12 months to 18 months are going to look like from an interest rate environment?
People understand that if government do not control inflation as they are expecting to, we're going to have more increase in the interest rates.
So an investor's reaction to that, I assume, is similar to the U.S., more of a cautionary thinking. If interest rates are going to continue to rise, what does that mean to me from an investment perspective?
We are seeing high interest rates. We can see the good thing and the bad thing for that. The good thing is that we have assets with a very good price for investors to enter in Brazil. But on the other hand, we have a lot of uncertainty, and some of the investors look like, should I take that risk or not? This is the situation that we have now. We expect to have that until the end of this year, at least.
All right, thank you. Now let's go to one of the countries been in the news with the U.S. here recently and all of the discussion back and forth. Let's start with Carlos in Mexico. What's the economic environment look? Is it similar to what Yelena described, or is it different? And what's the views going forward?
Thanks, Greg. I'd say it would be a mixed outlook. Mexico's facing a number of challenges, including regulatory environment, rule of law, which is the security. But at the same time, Mexico as a country has proven to be a quite resilient country. As it relates to growth, a growth between 1 and 2% is expected for this year. The two main factors supporting the growth would be manufacturing and exports, of which a significant portion is on the watch list, so to speak, due to the political tensions currently Mexico is having with the U.S. and tariffs and potential USMCA revisions, all of those things that we don't necessarily know what the final outcome is going to be and how they're going to affect exports and manufacture and tourism, which is also a great source of income for the country. And it's with a decreasing trend due to, again, security, rule of law, and all those things. Inflation, unlike Brazil, is being more controlled, ranging between 4 and 5%, which is still high, but it's lower than the 8% we had last year. And that has led to a decrease in interest rates. Last review we had was on February, and we moved from a 10% rate that we had, which is very high, to 9.50. And expectation is to end the year around 9% decrease. And in terms of investment, landscape is more cautious rather than optimistic, although the proximity to the U.S., nearshoring and all those things and stable macroeconomic environment could turn it into attractive for investors. Again, seeing what's going to happen with the U.S. and Mexico and Canada relationship, tariffs, and how the different reforms that are taking place in Mexico play out is going to be key to see if that's going to trigger either an increase in foreign capital coming into the country or more of investors being really cautious and not putting money in Mexico for the time.
Yeah, terrific. We'll go way further north up into Canada. Gentlemen, what are you seeing up in your homeland?
I'm the hawk, so let's let the dove speak first.
Let's go, Tom. Let's go.
The reality is, even before the uncertainty that we're talking about today, the Canadian economy was sluggish. You look at some of our key data, we've had unemployment rates at around 6.6%. We have had more luck with inflation. Inflation was below 2% in January. It shot up again in February to 2.6%. We've had our interest rates come down to as low as 2.75%. So there are some things going in the right direction. The interesting part of it is our GDP. We had 2% GDP growth in 2024. But when you sort of peel back the onion, you see that was largely due to significant immigration over the last 3 years. We added 3 million people to our population over the last 3 years, which may not sound like a lot from a U.S. perspective. That's over 8% of our population. You look at all of the consumer goods that it took to integrate those folks. I mean, that created GDP growth, modest GDP growth, but it resulted in GDP growth per capita of basically zero. And now that we've ratcheted back immigration, we're actually expecting a decrease in our population in 2025. So, you know, I don't even want to fathom what our GDP growth or negative growth will be in 2025. But what's overshadowing all of this is the talk of tariffs. And it's clearly one of the only things that's being talked about up here. And personally, I don't see how we can avoid a recession if those tariffs come in. And it's just going to take us a period of time to essentially adjust and recalibrate our economy to address that. So over to the Hawks. What do you got, James?
That was much more bearish than I thought you were going to be. It's interesting, Greg. I mean, you made the remark that people are saying there's never been more uncertainty and we just went through COVID. Quite frankly, I think there is more uncertainty right now. We're seeing numbers, just take something simple like cross-border trips that we haven't seen in my lifetime in terms of those coming down. They came down 500,000 in the last 2 weeks. The impact of this tariffs discussion on consumers cannot be understated. Like, it is having a massive, massive impact. And I don't think that's going to change, quite frankly, while the current U.S. administration is in power. I just don't think it is. I think it's just had a huge, huge impact on the view of our relationship with the U.S., unfortunately. And I just think that's where consumers are at. Money is definitely sitting on the sideline. We're not seeing the bump on M&A. Or let alone the IPO market here. I mean, I think people are still hopeful, but quite frankly, we've lost more public companies in the last 3 months than we've certainly had gains. People are going off just because of the high cost of being public. I know some of that trend's been seen in the United States.
Yes.
As well. Yeah, it's a challenge. I mean, I don't think anybody could really argue that we're already in a technical recession. And I think most of the major bank economists are thinking that's where we're headed. I guess the one last point, I mean, it's very, very tumultuous here, as you can probably guess. 3 months ago, the current federal government looked like they were dead in the water, the Liberals. And of course, they've changed leaders. Former Goldman Sachs banker and Bank of Canada governor, Bank of England governor, Mark Carney, he has erased a 26% decline against the Conservatives. And right now he is actually favored to win that election. And I'm not sure that that will be necessarily a good thing for economic growth, quite frankly. So that's going to get called probably on Sunday, pretty snap election. So probably at the for April 28th. So that's obviously going to have an impact as well. It's become an election that's about one issue: who can deal with the U.S. administration better? Mm-hmm. That's quite frankly where we're at.
We've had a change in government here in the U.S. Canada's going through one. Mexico went through one not too long ago. From a business perspective, how is the business community feeling? Is the administration that is projected to come in, do they feel that's more business friendly or less business friendly and the impact? And then maybe to Tom after that, with all this being said, how are the real estate investors reacting to the current conditions in Canada?
When you talk to the banks and the asset managers and other large corporate, they're very enthusiastic. Most would be of the view that the Liberals needed to pay for their mistakes for the last 9 years, and it doesn't really look like it's going to happen right now. So it's very interesting.
The Liberals are not expecting much change in ideology around business. Obviously a different leader, but from the basic principles that they're going to operate from, don't expect much change.
Your question on real estate. Mm-hmm. Over the last year, values have been reasonably stable, and how you're doing depends on which sector, which part of the real estate industry you're dealing with. We've seen tremendous increase in values for seniors housing, quite frankly, just because there hasn't been new supply for a long period of time. You mentioned data centers. There's been a lot of interest in data centers and industrial, purpose-built rental, grocery-anchored retail. That all seems to be holding its own. There's been a huge issue for real estate. We were hoping to thrive in 25, and that hasn't necessarily happened. If you're in the condo market, I mean, the condo market here, especially in Toronto, is dead. Developers are struggling. I think it's just been a few too many years of trying to carry their projects. So we are a little bit concerned. We're seeing some softness and are worried about certain developers being able to make it through. But quite frankly, the cloud that's hanging over real estate in general is what the impact of a slowing economy is going to have on the demand for real estate overall. And that is, to James's point, slowing transactions. We are not seeing the transaction flow that you described in the US, and it's going to hold us up for a few months at least until we know the lay of the land on these tariffs and how bad the economy is actually going to get.
Yeah, and the U.S. transaction market, make sure I didn't overstate it. We're still not back to 2019 levels, which is what I kind of go back to is kind of more normal. When you looked at the transaction volume we had actually through the COVID years, it was levels we hadn't seen. We're still clearly seeing some uptick from a regulatory front. A lot of the things that the administration is talking about, they're geared towards being business friendly to encourage more M&A. Still yet to come to see how that's going to roll out. And I think that's a lot of what you see out of the administration is a lot of discussion about here's what we might do, what we will do, what we can do, but it's really what actually gets done that's going to make the difference. You know, there's a lot of talk out there, even among the discussions around these tariffs. There's a lot of talk, right? So we'll wait, see how that works out and whether it's just a negotiation to get to a retrade of the USMCA or whether it's what it's going to be. But that's why I'm talking about being agile.
Sure.
But the underlying, and the same thing in the U.S. from a real estate perspective, the underlying fundamentals outside of office in some key markets, it's actually very good. Unemployment is still really strong from the perspective that we've got a great labor market, which is good for real estate. The consumer, even though their sentiment, as Yelena said, has started to be concerned, consumer spending is still fairly strong, and cap rates expected them to move more up higher. And we've started to see deals. There was a deal one of my clients lost out on yesterday that was a large multifamily that traded in the fours. The uncertainty around the M&A is, especially if your supply chain is going to be impacted, is, you know, how do we underwrite what the tariffs may be? Because even if you think that one of the objectives is to onshore, you can't start producing steel tomorrow. Some of the steel that's used, for example, in the oil and gas industry, we've never produced in the U.S. It'll be some challenges to work through, but I think people are starting to think, well, how do we be agile and build scenario planning that allows us to go one of two or three different directions as we move forward? But I know, Carlos, in Mexico, you've had administration change as well. From a business perspective, how's the business community reacting and responding to their ambitions and initiatives?
I would say it would be slightly more optimistic than the previous administration. But again, like I said before, very cautious as to what's going to happen. Mexico is not doing well when it comes to rule of law. There's a judiciary reform coming in, which no one's welcoming at all from the business perspective. So those things, while the community is feeling better towards this new administration, those factors still don't let them being as optimistic as anyone would expect because of that. And this government, while it has not been as tough on certain things as the previous government that we had, still is not drawing a line on those things that are of concern for the businesses. Again, this reform is very important, and what's being happening in terms of security and how the cartels are gaining more power and territory and all those things is, yeah, we'll somehow like this government better, but still this is happening and a lot of cautiousness is going on.
Investor sentiment in the U.S. in some ways is not much different in that a lot of the ambitions from a business-friendly and a regulatory environment that the administration has talked about, I think the business community is very favorable to. There's still some uncertainty of whether or not the steps being taken are going to get them to where they need to be. So I would view the business community somewhat cautiously optimistic as well, not disagreeing with where we want to get, but is this the path to get there that's going to be the most successful? You know, you've had a couple of years into this government. From the business community standpoint, what are they thinking about what they're saying in the direction from a business perspective?
We are seeing, Greg, deals in Brazil is still happening, but internal deals, majorly for consolidation business. But when we look ahead, some investors, they say, you know, this is our country, always been like this, and we needed to find ways to get money. So one market that it's finding a way to get money here is the credit market. It's providing a lot of opportunity for investors, and we are seeing that growing. So when we look to the economy, is this, although there are these three important points, high interest rate, inflation, and the government expenditures, investors are looking to the opportunities in the markets. And in every crisis, there is a big opportunity for you to pursue. That's the thinking that the investors are having here now.
Yeah, volatility for a lot of our investors is a good thing, right? That creates opportunity as long as the deal market is active, right? If there's volatility and no one's doing deals, but as long as there's activity, I know a lot of our investors welcome the volatility in the markets. So we're getting close to end of time. I'm just going to jump back to you, Lena, and just ask, what do you think about the comments made on Canada since being Canadian as well? Any other differing views? You agree with everything that's been said from your perspective on looking out from the Canadian economy?
Yeah, I also would agree with the comments about the slowdown in Canada is not something that's a new thing due to this administration's threats and actions towards tariffs. Frequently in the presentations I do to clients, I talk about how remarkable the U.S.'s growth has been over the last few years. But if you peel back the onion and you look at the growth due to the population side of the equation versus the productivity side of the equation, the U.S. has had both for a few years. Canada has only had the population side. And so this productivity has actually not even come back to 2019 levels in Canada. And there has been a lot of concern about the future opportunities for Canada's economy to grow if the population side of the equation starts to get restricted, which we are seeing it already happening. The expectation that there could be a recession in Canada, I very much agree with, because according to the IMF, just over 20% of Canada's GDP relies on the U.S. export market. We've already had the steel and aluminum, of which Canada is the biggest exporter to the U.S. We're probably going to get something more on lumber. We already have lumber tariffs. Something more will probably come in November. The self-selection of consumers to not want to travel across the border as much. I know hotels around the Canada-U.S. border have been reporting lower occupancies. So all of these behaviors can become that self-fulfilling prophecy, as well as the actual tariffs that will slow down the Canadian economy. The Bank of Canada does have some room to make it a little bit more of an expansionary policy to cut rates a little bit more. But of course, as was mentioned already, inflation did pick up slightly last month. So there's kind of that stagflation worry is not a U.S. only fear. Just to add some more statistics, Mexico's economy, 27% of Mexico's economy GDP relies on the U.S. export market. For Brazil, that number is only about 1.7 IMF statistics. So not as exposed for the Brazil side of things, but Mexico very much exposed. I'm feeling more optimistic whenever I see the news when the Mexican leadership has a phone call with our administration and all of a sudden there's a pause in tariffs. I always feel a sense of relief that there are some really good conversations happening. We haven't really seen that from the Canadian side. And as was mentioned, there is going to be an election. So it'll be interesting what the new or current leadership of Canada could potentially do in these conversations. But I am a little bit more optimistic about Mexico right now than I would be about Canada, to be quite honest with you. And then, of course, now we're hearing more and more partnerships being done by Canada and the UK, EU, LATAM, and other parts of Europe. So there's going to be these US not included deals probably being done over the next few quarters as well that we'll be learning more about.
Despite the short-term pain that is going to come from whatever the US administration puts out, I am to some degree thankful for what they're doing because it has woken up a bunch of our politicians. It has created a sense of nationalism that I think has been missing and has been diminished over the last number of years. One of our former prime ministers made a joke that he wants to endow President Trump with the Order of Canada for what he's done in sort of enlisting that sentiment. So there's a silver lining out of every crisis. There's an opportunity. Yeah. There is a lot of positive that's going to come out of this. For the short term, we're going to be experiencing pain until those times come.
There's the dove. I knew it would come out.
It's the optimism, James. It's the optimism.
Hey, Elaine, you mentioned in Canada there hasn't been a lot of productivity gains. When you think about the future, generative AI. I know in the U.S., every company that I speak with is investing in generative AI to some extent, whether it's back office, middle office, front office. Even in our surveys that we conduct twice a year, they went from very early stages to now in development to more people looking. Most of the investment has been in the back office trying to be more efficient, but you're starting to see people even make significant investments in the middle and front office. How do you think about that from an economist's perspective? And then I'm going to go around the horn and talk about in your respective countries, what are you hearing from a generative AI perspective?
From the overall economic perspective, the fact that it's still quite new, and I know we've had it for a few years now, but right now, studies are starting to show that any sort of productivity gains that generative AI has given, especially to white-collar work, have just been absorbed by more leisure time. So it hasn't really quite shown up in the organization's productivity quite yet. But I will say back in 2022, specifically when the US economy was reopening from COVID and the vaccine availability, it was really hard to find workers in a lot of industries that lost a lot of workers. So anything that was front of the house, customer facing. So kind of necessity became this mother of invention where productivity gains were really picking up back then because we couldn't find workers in healthcare, leisure, hospitality, some professional services, but not as much. So right now, the US productivity growth has been more from sectors where they've been kind of sluggish in productivity and where they couldn't find enough workers. Now, if Canada, Mexico, or even Brazil has that same future ahead for them where it's going to be harder to find workers, they will definitely start to reinvest in that productivity side of the equation. But I think for right now, Gen AI isn't showing up in the data, but it will because we've seen what the internet has done for the global economy. It just takes time for it to properly show up in the data. But as of right now, workers that are gaining productivity from AI just can finish their workday a little bit sooner, maybe do something else with their time.
What about the rest of the world? Are you seeing the interest in generative AI among your companies at the same levels? Carlos, what about Mexico? Are you seeing the Mexican business environment really digging into opportunities with generative AI?
I do, Greg, although in Mexico, as in many other things, the Gen AI wave will come a little bit later than that of more developed countries, in particular talking about financial services. Mm-hmm. We're starting to see that more in global firms established in Mexico with things such as DNA, risk management solutions, trading simulations, for target identification in the case of private equity, and things like that, but getting off to a slow start, if you will, and being pushed by, again, the fact that those are global firms, we're a step behind. But yes, I do see impacting in a positive way the landscape here in Mexico.
Terrific. Lino, Brazil, the same, different?
In Brazil, I think it's we are seeing definitely a lot of managers using Gen AI to provide insights and analytics to their business operations. And definitely it's a trend that will become more and more spread to the market and definitely will facilitate or become the operation easier in the future. But one thing that I have seen people discussing is that it will definitely be spread to all companies and all sectors and areas in the companies, but Gen AI will not replace the human decision. It's important, it will be spread, but it will not replace that. This is what I have heard from people talking about the team, and I do agree with that. We will still be important to get those analytics and transform the business.
Yeah, I heard a speaker a while back say that Gen AI is not going to take your job, but someone who knows how to use Gen AI will. And that's probably, for the most part, the way that I look at it. What about in Canada? Is Canada starting to invest more heavily in asset management real estate in the generative AI space?
Greg, we just finished a survey of 100 Canadian real estate companies and looked at what their views were with regards to AI and generative AI. And 100%, all of them indicated that Gen AI was, in their view, important to their competitive advantage and market share. So there's very much an interest in the real estate space for how to take advantage of Gen AI. You know, whether it's helping to get closer to your tenants or enhancing policy administration or just contract analysis, that sort of thing. Everyone gets that they have to do something. What's clear, though, is real estate as an industry is still a bit of a laggard when it comes to AI adoption when compared to other industries. And I think part of that is because in our industry, we're all about cash flows. I don't think we figured out the equation of how to get that ROI out of the AI investment. And I think maybe that's slowing things down a bit, but broad-based conversations, everybody's interested. Everybody knows that they have to get their data in order. They just haven't cracked the nut yet, and they don't necessarily want to be the first movers. They'd rather be fast followers, but definitely the interest is there. And I think we'll see some progress over the next 12 to 18 months.
Interesting. James, what about the broader asset management?
Still a top five priority, no question about it. I'd echo a lot of the comments. The one thing that's interesting, which isn't necessarily what you would think would happen, but our low dollar is causing computer power to be quite expensive. And so that's an issue some of the managers and banks and others that we talk to are talking about. Good for NVIDIA, I guess, but.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think anything related to Gen AI, the chips, the data centers, there's bright, bright future there. Well, we're out of time. I want to thank all of you for joining, for all the speakers and the guests. And as I think the overall sum it up, it went from very cautionary to cautiously optimistic, and really not so much from my perspective, the underlying fundamentals of what's happening in the economy, but more the uncertainty about what may occur based upon the geopolitical issues that are forming out there. And I think that's probably consistent across the globe. And my hope is that that'll play itself out sooner than later. Whatever the outcome may be in these negotiations, which I think they are negotiations, and I do get optimistic like Elena does when you see the conversations, for example, between Mexico and the U.S., and you come away feeling, hey, they made some progress. But in the meantime, if anybody listening to this would want to follow up with any of us, we'd be happy to talk to you one-on-one about what we're seeing in the economy or addressing any of the business issues you may be facing as you navigate these uncertain times. But again, thank you for taking the time to listen today, and we look forward to speaking again soon.